Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. I'm joined today by a state champion from Mississippi, the head football coach at Horn Lake High School, Coach Brad Boyack. Coach, it's great to have you here today.
Hey, thank you, Keith, for having me. I certainly appreciate it.
For those of you who want a reference point in trying to figure out where is Horn Lake, it is a suburb of Memphis, Tennessee, so it's in the corner, northwest corner of Mississippi, and Coach just pointed out to me that if you're going there and you want to look for a lake, there's no lake in Horn Lake.
Yeah, if there is one here, I hadn't found it yet. I've been here 7 years. I hadn't found the lake.
Coach, you guys had a phenomenal year, winning your first state championship, and we're going to get into some of the things you've learned along the way this past year and on that road to a championship. But before we do that, I want to step back and talk about your start in coaching and why you do it. What was it that made you want to become a football coach?
Just like, I think this is pretty common with a lot of coaches, that gotten in this profession, they got in it because it had a lot of admiration for the guy that coached them. And, no different here. I had a tremendous high school football coach that, learned a lot of life lessons and, just enjoyed being around him. And I think it was making a subconscious decision, hey, I want to be like that guy. And, my parents either were in education. A lot of coaches are son of coaches, but in my case, it was strictly my high school football coach that, just the admiration of him and wanting to kind of follow in his footsteps.
And this is a profession which, for the most part, guys grow in. There's certainly, and we've had on this podcast, coaches who get that opportunity right out of college. But, Coach, talk to us about those early years for you as you developed as a coach. What were some of the important lessons you learned during that time?
First job, I went to a school that took the job there as an assistant, and that took that job that summer, and on the front page of USA Today, longest losing streaks in high school football in America. And the school I was going to was one of those schools. Went in there and as an assistant, and it was a new head coach, and there was a first game of the season that first year we won that game, and that was one of the biggest things. And went on one like six, not a great team, but won six or seven games. This was a team that had lost 61 games in a row going into that season. And I think right there, just I got a kind of a desire to, that kind of paved the way that I like going into a program that is, I like seeing a culture change. I like seeing places that aren't supposed to win become winners and the excitement that goes along with that. And it's just been, if I have a knack in coaching, it's probably that. Just, being a glutton for punishment and taking jobs at places. But it's just turned out pretty well at the places I've been.
That's an intriguing part of the profession for me as well. I always was drawn to those situations where, you could go in and with a good plan and with vision for your culture in place, you could go in and change things pretty quickly to get a team on track, to get guys buying into the right things. Maybe not always the wins coming right away, but guys doing the right things that are going to make a difference for them in their life. And a lot of times, Coach, I think you'll agree with this, when you go into those situations and you say, here's our vision, here's what you're going to do, you have a lot of those people on the outside saying, you're not going to be able to do that here. Don't you know where we've been? But that, I think, is the challenge of it. And what's rewarding, too, as you start to see that change, sometimes even in that first year, just the change in how players are approaching their workouts, players how are interacting with each other, with their coaches, et cetera. What kinds of things do you typically do to get those things started for you to start getting that culture, you know, laying the foundation for it and getting guys going in the right direction?
Well, first thing, you've got to stay the course. But I mean, so many times, me and I think everybody, we want to do something and we want to see an immediate result. Well, culture change is not an immediate result. I mean, that's 2-3 year process of, you know, getting benefits, seeing reward from the different things that you're doing, you're implementing within your program. Number one, I would say that would be the number one thing is, you know, not getting frustrated because it's a situation, you know, like situation at Horn Lake, and you know, you take 2 steps forward, you take a step backwards, so it takes a while. But just the first thing I tell the coaches is, you know, number one, we do not coach football. We coach young men. Mm-hmm. And when we dive into the differences of what that looks like and what's the difference between coaching kids and coaching football, you know, the kids see it and then, you know, they buy in, and then you start to implement, you know, cultural change. They buy into that. And you know, then the next thing, you know, you've got your community within your program, then it goes into your school, then into your community, and then, you know, then you've got a chance.
Coach, when you look at going into those situations, there always has to be a starting point and something, I guess for lack of a better term, something tangible that the players can grasp onto, because we can throw out, you know, all those intangible ideas, we could throw out those big words, but ultimately, you know, their work needs to attach to something. What are some of the first things you look to do within a program to get guys going the right way and to start to get the buy-in that you need?
That question has so many answers to it because there's so many things involved in it. But one of the things, and I'm just going to pick one thing that kind of came to mind when you asked that question. I think every coach out there says, you know, we need leadership. You know, and that's something that's very important in every team is leadership within your team, team leaders. Yet, you know, one of the things that we're intentional and we do purposeful here is we have a time set aside where we teach leadership skills. I know as a coach for several years, I was one of the ones that said, you know, man, we just don't have any leadership on this team. We just don't have any leadership. And the next year we may have some. But at no time was I ever doing anything to teach it. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, just luck of the draw. I got a kid that, you know, maybe learned it at home or wherever. I wasn't doing anything to teach it. And then the second part of that is once you teach leadership skills, you got to put them in a position to where they can be leaders. You've got to step back and let your team leaders have an opportunity to be team leaders. And I know that that's one little tiny slice of a pie, but that is we can talk about maybe 100 other things, but that was one thing here that, you know, that we implemented and I thought was good, you know, just being intentional about teaching kids how to be leaders. And then secondly, you know, allowing them the opportunity to do it.
Coach, that's something you've applied at Horn Lake. You guys have gone from being a team that has only made the playoffs a couple times in its history to winning a state championship and being one of the best teams in Mississippi. And looking at that process and steps along the way, what was it that made that shift for you from, you know, a team that wasn't experiencing that level of success to a team now that is at the top? Were there key things you saw along the way that you felt like, okay, we're getting to that next step, or we're to that next step right now?
Yes. There's so many moving parts, and there were so many things, and I'm going to touch on a couple of them. One of the first things that when I got here, we had a dysfunctional middle school feeder program. When I got here, there were 24 kids playing eighth grade football. Today, right now there are 80 kids playing eighth grade football.
Nice.
So that program, we had to get that correct, and that was step one. The the other step, which we talked about extensively here, when I got into coaching, where you on the high school level, where you could separate yourself from other teams was in your strength and conditioning, primarily the weight room, because 20 years ago, across the board, teams were not involved in a year round strength conditioning program, and if you did that, you really gave yourself an edge against your competition. Today, that's not the case. I think the edge today is all the things we were talking about earlier, being intentional about building your culture, your team, your team building activities, having a plan and being intentional about showing kids what adversity is, how you overcome it. So I think that is the edge right now in high school football, where you can separate yourself, from some other, other teams, other programs.
Coach, I think that when you look at culture, it is a very tangible thing. You can see it in how your team does things. I think back to, one of the programs I was part of, I would tell them all the time that, as an example, when a stranger walks into this locker room, into our field house, they should be able to look at it and say, champions live here. The idea that being, everything in their locker is in place. There's not trash on the ground. Everything is cleaned and taken care of. And, it wasn't something we ever left to the janitor. We took responsibility for those things. In fact, their job was pretty easy when it came to cleaning our field house. But that kind of stuff, whether it's how your locker room looks or what you see out of your practice, what you see out of your players on the practice field or in the weight room, those are very tangible behaviors that tell a lot about your program. So if we're looking at Horn Lake High School and your football program, what are the behaviors that we expect to see out of your players?
Keith, it was like you've been sitting in team meetings with me. That's one of the things I talk about all the time. And, I was just at a clinic back in February, and Dabo Swinney said he can work in a locker room and he can smell success. Mm-hmm. He said because any other smell is the smell of a loser, and he set it up kind of with a little humor involved there, but that's so true. I mean, I don't think you get to pick and choose where you apply character. I mean, it's an all the time thing. We tell our guys that, everything we do, and our coaches will, not only myself, but there's 10 assistants here, they'll ask a player at any given time, what's your purpose? And whether we're in the weight room or we're doing obviously off season right now, doing some change of direction drills, speed development drills, and we expect our players at any given time to know exactly what their purpose is and what they're doing, as in any given time. And then big picture wise, what's our purpose in the off season? What's our purpose in the month of March? What's our purpose in the month of, therefore, if you walk in, I want you to see guys that are doing something with a purpose, they're intentional, and they've got, and with that, if they're doing those things, then you're going to see people doing things the correct way, with some effort, with some intensity. If you walk in, that's what I hope you'd see.
Coach, as we look at the strategic side of it, and starting with how you coach up your different systems, the expectations of how that install looks from the classroom to the walkthrough to you guys practicing it so that it's perfect on game day, what are some of the things you guys believe in and work as far as your coaching methods to get your guys ready to play the game on the field?
Well, I mean, each coach at each position has some non-negotiables, and those things are emphasized every day. And I mean, ball security, you know, proper ball placement for a running back, that's not negotiable. Each position has, you know, a list of those things that are front and center every day. You know, we structure our day, I guess, pretty similar to a lot of programs. I mean, we make sure that we have ample meeting time. We're able to show, make corrections from the day before on film, go over the things that we're going to do that day. We try to practice like our pants are on fire. We practice fast, and, you know, I ask my coaches, you know, have coaching points, keywords, things, you know, not to stop practice to talk to one kid. You know, we're filming every practice from three angles. They should, you know, should be able to make that correction on tape. Thing that I got from a guy at North Dakota State a couple of years ago, and it's really helped us, especially with depth, is everything we're doing now, we're three spotting. So if we're doing 7-on-7, we've got three spots of 7-on-7 going inside run, whatever you may call it. We've got that going on at three spots. And then an adjustment we made last year that I thought really helped with depth was we took our coordinators, and our coordinators, we've got ones going versus ones, twos versus twos, threes versus threes. We took our coordinators and they worked primarily with the threes. And we let our younger coaches work with the ones, basically calling the plays, you know, keywords, coaching points, not stopping practices, but you know, we felt like, you know, more coaching, more experienced eyes need to be on the younger player because they're more likely to misstep. You know, they're going to have more mistakes at that level than our ones are going to have. And I thought as the season rolled on this year when we were, and you know, just like any other year, you know, which we were very fortunate this year, didn't have any major injuries, but there were times where players had to come out of the game and a two or possibly even a three had to go on the field, and I thought we were better than our opponents this year when we had to go to the two and three because of the way we were practicing.
And that's something you guys do from camp all the way through the season?
We do it every day. Every day. Now, when we get it, we will have a team period where coordinators are with ones, obviously. You know, we'll have that period, but we'll also have a period where, the coordinators are with the twos or the threes, depending, you know, sometimes that rotates from day to day. But the purpose here is just trying to make sure that we're coaching the kid that actually needs more coaching. We're getting more coaching to that kid.
So, Coach, in that format where you have the younger coaches, I guess the less experienced coaches working with your first team, I guess how are you ensuring their development? Do you feel that from coaching those better players, they get an opportunity to maybe develop, see things that are done right, I guess, more frequently? Or, you know, what's your thought process on making sure those guys, you know, your younger coaches develop there?
You know, just like myself and you and, you know, we've all been in a situation where we were a young coach.
Yeah.
And I remember being on the staff, and I'm not, please don't ask me which staff, but I was on the staff and went in. Went in for spring ball. I was young coach, and assignments were given out for practice, and I was given the duty of backup kickers.
A lot of responsibility there, Coach.
Yeah, you know, number one, I had no knowledge of kicking. You know, I mean, basically it was said, you know, I felt like I was told, hey, go in the corner until we get done.
Right.
And, you know, which was a very important lesson that I learned from that, is that I don't do my coaches that way.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to feel, you know, I want every guy on the staff to feel important. I want every guy on the staff to get better. I want every coach on the staff to have a desire to be a head coach, and I want to do everything possible, you know, in my power to help them, you know, reach their goal. So the more, you know, this situation, the way we practice and give them more responsibility, meaningful responsibility, I think just makes them a better coach. A few years back, I called every offensive play. I didn't feel like I was getting a lot of assistance from assistants, because being the head coach and calling the plays, I think it was a situation there of I had a bunch of guys that disagreed with me. You know, I don't know how much input I was getting. Made a change, I guess, 3 years ago to where I named an offensive coordinator, and then I coached the position. That coach had became a coordinator, and now I'm getting tenfold the coaching out of that guy that, as I did, you know, prior. I'm getting tenfold of the coaching out of him as I did, you know, just by giving him more responsibility. And so with that lesson learned, then I've just tried to apply it to where, I want every guy on our staff to feel like they have a meaningful task, you know, whether in each practice, in each game plan, in each game, whatever, you know. Right now we're in off season. They've got input into their off season, and we try to make sure that, you know, there's no one that's asked to do something like, hey, you know, take these two guys that are never going to play and y'all go over there somewhere.
Well, Coach, moving into a little bit of the X's and O's, as you look back on the 2018 season, what was an offensive concept or a defensive concept that really made a difference for you guys and maybe was a little bit unique as to the way you do it?
Well, Keith, I'll tell you, first and foremost, nothing about what we did. We were not cutting edge offensively. We're a gap scheme team, primarily 11 and 12 personnel. You know, that, you know, we run power, we run counter, the pin and pull. That was pretty much our offense with, you know, and obviously we had, you know, like every other team in America now, I think you got to, you know, throw your RPOs off each play. We had basically, you know, three run concepts that made up about 80% of a run game, with RPOs off each one, play action off each one. Then, you know, we had a quarterback that could really run, so we ran a lot of naked off of each play. And that was what we did. The thing that, if any one thing elevated us offensively, or one concept elevated, was a meeting we had with Joe Moorhead, who took the job at Mississippi State this year. Mm-hmm. And then he was, you know, he's a real big RPO guy. And our RPOs prior to this year were basically lateral throws. You know, the bubble screen or the fast screen off of gap scheme runs, and we wanted to be able to throw the ball down the field. And I knew he did it, but I didn't know. I just needed the coaching points on it, and you know, how to teach a quarterback to make that read and make that throw, when to make that throw, when not to make that throw. And you know, that meeting with Coach Moorhead was probably the most significant thing that added to our offense this year is anything. And that was just, you know, everybody's trying to get that eighth guy in the box, and just how to, you know, teaching your quarterback how to locate that eighth guy, and then, you know, how to throw a skinny post or slant behind that guy and get a throw down the field that's a, you know, 10 to 12 yard catch. And, you know, we got a lot of mileage out of that this year. You know, being more specifically, you know, a play that was really good for us was an 11 personnel. We'd have a tight end in like the H position behind the tackle, and we'd run with two speed receivers to the field. We'd run counter into the boundary, and when that tight end would pull, we'd usually get the boundary safety. He'd roll down to, you know, fit counter. Well, that, we got a lot of throws to our single receiver in the boundary on the post right there. You know, just running counter, and our quarterback got pretty good at being able to see that guy sneaking in the box and being able to make that throw.
Now, yeah, that's an interesting one, and I've seen a lot of people using that, especially I feel like that, you know, you could call it 11. Some people like to call it the 21 personnel because that guy's inside the box. Regardless, you got an H-back in there and you're running that counter RPO. Where's your back in the way you run it, Coach? Is he same side? Is he coming across in relation to how your quarterback's able, I guess, to get his eyes on that safety?
And that was probably the longest part of our conversation is because our back, our rules with our back always puts him to the speed receivers. So with two speed receivers to the field, that puts our back opposite side of the slants you're throwing. So, and we talked extensively about how do you mesh point that the quarterback actually turn his head to see that safety. And Coach Moorhead had played with the footwork of the quarterback a little bit to where he can open his front shoulder to where he can see that with reps and back up. When we installed that concept, our day one, our quarterback said, "I can't do this. I can't have a mesh with a back on my right and then read the safety back to my left." That was day one. I can't do it. And this was about this time last year we started working on it, and then by the time we got to our spring game, I think we threw and completed that RPO six times in the spring game last year.
Nice.
Once our quarterback saw it and did it and it was successful, then, learning it became real easy. Now, had the first throw, if he had thrown it to the safety, we would probably never gotten it in.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to work those things over and over, show those guys that they can have success. And I'm sure being able to do that in the spring and doing it in those games probably went a long way to build that confidence. So in week one of the regular season, you have a guy out there who went from saying, "Coach, I can't do this," to feeling very confident in it.
Right, no question. And, there was that was a big play for us because, I think we did it enough, especially early in the season, to where I think we kept numbers balanced in the box. We really wouldn't do anyway enough to run the football.
Well, Coach, you shared some great ideas with us here today. The question I always like to finish up with on the podcast is, looking at all the things you do, what would be the one thing you'd point to that really gives your team the winning edge?
And I go back to what we started out the podcast about, Keith, is the biggest thing with us right now is just a little simple equation, E plus R equals O, and I know a lot of programs around the country are familiar with that, and just event plus response equals outcome, and understand that there's only one thing that you have complete control over, and that's your response. And events are going to come in a lot of different shapes and sizes, and some are going to be a lot uglier than others. But how are you going to respond to it? And I think we've got a group of kids here that have bought into that, and they realize that no matter what comes their way, that I'm in control of the response, which is an equal to outcome, and my response is going to be intentional, purposeful, and skillful.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds, in the world of football, a lot of older coaches think that sounds like some kumbaya stuff, but it's, I think the mental side of the game and in today's world with today's kid and, the world trying, kids aren't supposed to deal with adversity. It's got to be somebody else's fault. And when you can overcome that and, put it back on them that, hey, you're going to have adverse situations and your response is going to dictate the outcome. And that's it. And you hammer that every day. I firmly believe that's where our edge is right now.
Coach, I appreciate you taking the time. For our listeners out there, if they want to learn more about anything you're doing, what's the best way to connect with you?
Email brad.boyette@dcsms.org. That's probably the quickest way to connect with me. I'm on, you can follow me on Twitter, follow our team on Twitter. Just Horn Lake Football. If you put in Horn Lake Football, I think the tag is actual HL Football. But we've got some things that go out there daily on that. But I'd welcome anybody want to discuss more about it. I love bouncing ideas off other coaches, and that's one thing about this profession. If you're not working to get better, an alternative is happening. Anybody'd like to reach out and discuss more, I'd welcome it.
Coach, again, thanks for taking the time. Appreciate all you're doing there, and best of luck to you and your team in 2019.
Hey, thank you very much.
Check out our new Twitter at FBDEV Coach. We're doing some great stuff there every single day. We're adding to it as we go through the off season here. Want it to be a great resource for coaches out there. Also, check out our systems at footballdevelopment.com if you are looking for some cutting-edge techniques. We put it together in our advanced tackling system as well as our contact system. I also highly recommend you checking out our system for building culture, and we partner with Focus 3 and Brian Kite, and Brian's done a phenomenal job in helping organizations around the country, from corporate America to the education world to teams like Ohio State. If you read the book Above the Line, all of that book was about what Brian and his father Tim did to help out the Buckeyes. You could go get our system at usafootball.com/focus3.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.